Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight will be Dustin Hubbard, and just bear with me while I dial his phone number. And if you are into horror, indie horror especially, you will know who Dustin Hubbard is. So coming up, I am dialing, and we should be talking with him shortly. Hopefully.
Hello.
Hello, Dustin. Can you hear me okay?
Hey, I can.
Oh, goody, goody. It doesn't always happen that way. So, okay, might as well just... might as well just delve right into it. Well, how are you doing tonight?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, yeah, just peachy keen. I know, that's way before my time even. But seriously, I'm all right. Thanks for asking.
Good.
So what I wanted to start with is, well, I like to go as close to the beginning as I can, at least to the beginning that I know of. Because on IMDb, it has your first credits. Well, there's two for 2008, which was Wet Heat and Shelter. If you want to talk about those two for a little bit, like what they were about, what you did.
Yeah, it's weird because IMDb will sometimes, you know, things that might have come a smidge later kind of end up earlier because some stuff might sneak out before others do. But
right.
With Shelter was actually a short film I worked on with Joel and Kathy Weinkoop that was directed by Jason McCourie. And all three of them had actually worked on my first feature, which was For Christ's Sake, and which is currently still unreleased for many reasons. But we all met on that and all got along great. And one of the actresses that was in For Christ's Sake, Nicola Fiore, Jason wanted to use in Shelter, so he asked if she wanted to come down and play Joel's daughter in it. So I rode up with her and was basically the right hand behind the camera for Jason, doing basically anything and everything possible. So it was, you know, mom and dad stuck, or it's a dad and a daughter, that's it, stuck in a garage where he finds an old container that looks like it might have a werewolf fetus in it from World War II that was his dad's, and he scratches himself on the lid, and he turns into a werewolf, and she's trapped in the garage with him in a crazy little short that you can actually watch for free on Amazon Prime. And Wet Heat was just one. I was a very low-level producer on that for a friend of mine, Chris Siever. That was one of a couple of movies I was a producer on. He makes very wild, absurdist horror comedies that usually have very, very strange humor, very crazy characters, very goofball stuff, but they usually have body counts and crazy gore. So, and Wet Heat was kind of a riff on Escape from New York, where the president of the entertainment industry gets kidnapped and this crazy character gets called in to try and save him. Oh, fun movies. So.
Good, yeah. Well, it sounds like it would be fun. I like those kind of movies. Now, this
That's
next one
wacky.
I picked it. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I sometimes I can't tell when people are done talking because of the overlap. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're good.
Well, oh, thanks. The next one I picked, I picked simply because I like the title, because it's funny. Terror at Blood Fart Lake. Tell me
about
that one.
You know, Terror at Blood Fart Lake was another one. I was one of a handful of producers on that was also made by Chris Siever, the director behind Wet Heat. And the female lead in it was actually, again, Nicola from Shelter and For Christ's Sake. And Chris wanted to use her in that. And that was... the title is really weird. It's definitely one that will always stand out, but I think it's a very hilarious movie. It's about a group of kids who go to a cabin for the weekend to, you know, have a, you know, wild party weekend with lots of, you know, drinking and sex, and they arrive and there is a killer scarecrow that makes the scene and starts killing everyone. Again, very weird, over-the-top, absurdist comedy. but very, very, very fun, I think. It's very lighthearted and silly. There's a lot of killing, a lot of gore, and it's fun. It's weird. It's definitely weird. A title like that will always stand out on a resume, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the kind of thing I look for when I'm looking through people's movies, especially when they have a lot of credits like you do. You have lots and lots of credits. So how am I supposed to pick which one to talk about? So I just find the ones that have interesting titles.
Yeah, totally.
is basically what I do.
Yeah.
Going back to this one that you were already talking about, because some of the people may not know that you did so much on it, that movie, For Christ's Sake. I mean, I was looking at all the stuff you did on it. You did the special effects and wardrobe, assistant camera, script supervisor, director, production manager, screenplay, casting, actor, and producer. I mean, that's 10 separate credits on one movie. I mean, I know that's common in independent movies. I know, but... for you, wasn't that like it was like something new, wasn't it? Because you were still kind of new to making movies, or am I wrong?
Technically, no, you're completely correct. That, For Christ's Sake, was technically my very first film that I ever did. I was working at a very popular movie rental business that I'm sure we all remember that no longer exists anymore. And I worked with some people a couple different people, like Nicola was my boss there, and I worked with another guy, Michael Kenneth Farr, and one or two other people that were within my own store, and we were like, you know, we rent a lot of bad movies. You know, we carry a lot of really stupid, silly stuff, you know, and we could probably do better. And we discussed it as a group. I, you know, kind of pitched some ideas and titles, and that was the one that kind of, and we just ran with it. I wrote a script, and Michael and Nicola helped produce it, and I just pulled together as much talent and stuff behind the scenes as possible to assist with it. It was a humongous undertaking, and like I said, it's still not come out. It might surface one day eventually, but it was very difficult to make. It was very controversial for its time. You know, we were doing that back in the MySpace days, and I got a lot of hate mail and very rude emails and stuff because we were making a movie about two Christian scientists who clone Jesus. And it's a horror movie, you know, and through a series of conditioning and basically brainwashing, you know, and conditioning, he takes teachings the wrong way, and, you know, people who sin around him just sort of naturally meet their fates. And, you know, I think there was a lot of, you know, I'm biased probably because I wrote it and directed it, but I think there was a lot of interesting ideas and themes in it. There's some good acting in it. Debbie Rashawn was our lead, screen queen Debbie Rashawn, and, you know, I got Joel, and we had Jason and a bunch of other people that had done a lot of independent film work around that time, like Monique Dupree and Peter Stickles and Lloyd Kaufman. And it was a big project, but very troublesome So one day, like I said, one day maybe it'll still surface. So
yeah, that, I probably would like it because I like controversial stuff. Well, not just because it's controversial. I mean, it's got to be good, but I like stuff that other people say, oh, yeah, that's terrible. You're right.
Yeah, crazy stuff that'll make you think.
Well, yeah, and especially since, you know, a lot of that stuff is true about the brainwashing
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I mean, you know. That's why they get so mad about it.
Yeah, part of the trick with it, too, was to try and take something that was touchy subject matter like that and actually try and do it intelligently, you know, and not just make something crude and exploited, but actually, you know, have there be some brains behind it. But like I said, you know, I wrote it and directed it, so I'm probably biased in that statement. So, but it was a fun movie to make. I learned a lot making it. And it was good experience, and I met a lot of great people who I still work with, obviously, to this very day. So made a lot of good connections and a lot of good friendships on that movie. So I'm glad that it happened.
Oh, good. Okay, well, something else I was going to ask you about, because I saw that this movie, Inheritance, and I'm talking about
mm-hmm.
the one that's around the same time as For Christ's Sake, there was like three of them, 1, 2, and 3. And so what were those like, and what were they about?
Yeah, the Inheritance movies were a trilogy of short horror films that I acted in, along with Michael Kenneth Farr, who acted in and helped produce For Christ's Sake. We had done some acting for a company that is no longer exists, that was out of Boston, and they used to distribute a lot of independent horror films and produce a lot of independent horror shorts. And they contacted us and said, hey, would you be interested and or willing to, you know, make some shorts for us? You know, here are some ideas that we had and stuff. And they were mostly generic ideas, you know, like, oh, we had an idea about a short where two roommates who don't like each other and they want to kill each other. And Michael was like, that's kind of boring. Let's change it up. And he just came up with a whole different plot. And, you know, we ended up playing brothers whose parents had just died. And, you know, we were living in the same home and wanted to kill each other to basically get all the money. So, and they were improvisational shorts. We had loose scripts and breakdowns of scenes, but no scripted dialogue or anything. So they were actually, in all honesty, probably some of the most fun acting I've done, because it was very, very creative feeling to me from an acting standpoint. But they're really fun. And, you know, we ended up doing three of them. Nicola ended up having a role in the third one. And Michael always had the idea to try and adapt them into a feature. And that was a talk for a long time. And we eventually did that. And he wrote and directed a feature-length version that we made last fall based on the same concept, but a bit more detailed, obviously, with a lot more characters.
Wow. Sounds very interesting. You had a lot of fun with that, too, though, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely something I will always remember. And like I said, doing those shorts, you know, they are not the greatest shorts, and I'm totally okay with that. But I think, for me, I think they're really amusing. And I think that what we were able to accomplish was pretty fun. So, you know, I'm proud of them. So that company doesn't exist anymore. So they ended up putting those three shorts out on a DVD anthology of shorts that has been out of print for a good number of years. So I sell them now. So that's really the only way you can see them, because they're not online anymore or anything. They just sort of don't exist at this point. So one of those things where, you know, movies get made and they just sort of fall through the cracks, and, you know, you either have it or you don't.
Yeah, a lot of good ones get lost by the wayside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So another movie that.
No, I was just going to say that's the case there with those. They just kind of, you know, you can't really find them anymore. And if you ever wanted to see them, you'd have to contact me, because I'm probably the only one that on the planet that sells them at this point. So.
Well, there you go. For anybody that's listening, if you're interested in some of these movies, that's what you got to do to get them. Now, of course, you probably knew I was going to ask about this one simply because I like the name. Evil Bong 3, The Wrath of Bong.
I had very low-level producing jobs on some movies for Full Moon Features in L.A., and I had a producer on two Evil Bong movies, basically parts 3 and 6. So, you know, which are horror stoner comedies. Part 3 is about a space bomb that comes to Earth and, you know, challenges humanity, and the heroes have to team up with the evil Bong from the first two movies to try and defeat the other Bong. As you can see, there's a lot of movies with weird, goofy plots that I've been involved in or had my name on.
Now, I know you were in something called, like, Canimator. What about that? What went on with that?
Yeah, like, Canimator was the first collaboration I had with a filmmaker in Canada named Sebastian Godin. And we became sudden fast friends and were just randomly spitballing ideas. And he, you know, some of my good friends, we like to just toss titles out there and see what sticks. And he threw that title out there, and I was like, that feels genius. It's like a, you know, because lycanthrope is like the bogus scientific word for werewolf. And the animator part, like Reanimator, you know, of H.P. Lovecraft fame. So we're like, you know, it's like a Reanimator werewolf type thing. And I was like, I love that title, let's make it. And, you know, I challenged him to write me a first draft script within a certain window of time, and he crushed that. So we made it, and we shot it in Myakka, Florida here, about an hour away from where I live, in a very dilapidated, repugnant house that was very dirty. There was no AC. It was haunted. Many people had died in the house. There was just a lot of bad, gross energy all over the place. But it was a super fun movie to make. I played one of the scientists in it. And Joel Weinkoop was in it as the hero, Niven, who used to work at the scientist's house as an assistant and witnessed a lot of the crazy goings on, and ended up moving away and became a crazy vagrant who tries to warn people to stay away from the house. And then a bunch of partying kids go to the house and find the serum that creates the monsters, and one forces another to drink it, and all hell breaks loose, and he transforms into like a slimy werewolf that proceeds to kill everyone.
Oh boy.
Fun stuff. So it's a really fun movie. Again, I had, you know, Joel and Kathy had a role in that. The director, Seb, he acted in it as well. We had a bunch of new faces that I had never worked with, local Florida talent like Kate Phoenix and Kai Hornick and Brianna Wyman, Jonathan Smith, all great, a great lineup of people to have on set. It was a really fun shoot. So, and a crazy movie, really, just like, I don't even know how to describe it, but if you ever see it, it's like it's like a drug trip. It's just a bizarrely candy colored hallucinatory feeling experience. I don't know how to describe it. The post production was very insane, and it went through many, many hands as far as the editing process goes. So there was a lot of perspectives put into the structure of the movie. So it's a very chaotic, bizarre view, but definitely not boring and always crazy. So, and it just came out on VHS recently, so.
Ooh. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that one because it sounds really interesting. Because I like stuff like that. It's not really different per se, but sort of different because it's going back to like, David Lynch and the trippy stuff.
Yeah,
I like.
And it's definitely. Seb is a big fan of like Japanese kaiju movies and things like that. So it's very much a throwback as well to like guy in creature suit movies, if that makes sense, too. So it's like
Yes. It's
very campy, very. Just it's a weird view, man. But it's like I said, it is never boring. It's honestly probably one of the craziest things that I've ever actually been involved in. And I was talking to Joel the other night, and you know, he had watched his VHS of it, and he didn't remember certain moments. And I was like, again, I might be biased, but I was like, I think this is one of your most epic rules, because I think Joel was. He brought a certain emotional depth and realness to his crazy vagrant character that you wouldn't have expected. And I don't think you'd especially expect from him either, because you picture him, you know, what they say, going wine coop, you know, but it's like he's very real feeling in it, and it's a powerful performance. I don't know how else to say it. He's really friggin' good. He's so good.
So see, now you'll have people wanting to see it, which of course is the whole point of talking about it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
he's
it makes me
want
to see it just talking about him. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead with what you were saying.
No, you're good. No, everyone should watch it. It's wild. You know, one thing I will say is that the Wild Eye releasing DVD that was released, they actually put out the wrong cut. So if you do watch it, beware of the version that's on Amazon Prime or the DVD that they've been selling, because it's the incorrect cut. So we aren't super thrilled about that, but the correct cut is what got put on the VHS, and they're going to actually do a re-release of the DVD in the fall. So we will actually have the proper cut coming out. So, but everyone should definitely watch it. If you love Wine Coop, watch it, because he'll knock your socks off in it.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to have to see now. Well, I like the storyline and everything anyway, and with all the good people in it, you know, including yourself, I really want to see it. Just hearing you talk about it makes me want to see it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry?
No, I just said it's a fun one.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, it sounded like it. It sounded like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, I ask a lot of people this. Some don't really have a favorite, but sometimes I like to ask, of all those things that you've done, producer, actor, you know, so forth, so on and so forth, do you have a favorite? Like, do you prefer acting over directing, or directing over producing, or, you know, whatever?
I do. I, first and foremost, always consider myself a producer. I think it's where I'm most adept at professionally. I like producing. I like helping bring things together and see a project through from inception to completion and release. I think that's actually a very gratifying position, and to be able to help filmmakers get their visions created. I like doing anything, honestly, but I would prefer always producing over anything else. Acting can be stressful in a different way to me that I don't always enjoy. So I might have a lot of acting credits, but I usually only act for directors that I really like or respect. I just don't like acting. Usually when I do, I'm like, it's me doing favors for people and stuff, you know. But, like, if people want me to do something, I'll usually do it. But I don't enjoy acting myself personally. So I enjoy writing. I enjoy directing, but I would prefer producing more over anything.
Yeah, acting isn't for everybody. I mean, just like producing isn't for everybody. So, and you're a good producer, so that's why you have so many credits and you have so many people fighting to get into your films.
I hope.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, this is like moving ahead a little bit in timeline. I think it started in like 2017. You did a whole series of films, and I believe there was like 9 of them, called the Paranoia Tapes. So tell me about those and how it came about and, you know, what it was like filming them. Other than paranoia, you know, paranoid about what? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, the Paranoia Tapes movies, they started in, I remember the first Paranoia Tapes movie actually hit DVD the week we were shooting Like Animators. So that came out, and it's been a whirlwind of releases, that's for sure. There are 9 of them currently. A film series kind of overseen by Jack Hunter, is the main producer of them, and he's a regular producing collaborator of mine. I'm involved in his company, SSP, and I usually help produce on all of their projects, and Paranoia Tapes is kind of like the main thing that SSP is known for right now. And they're found footage anthology movies about a guy who discovers a bunch of old videotapes that were in his father's possession, and he starts to watch them, and they have a lot of insane, can't possibly be real scenarios on them, and lots of crazy, horrific things start to unfold for him as he starts to, you know, learn about his true identity and things about himself that he didn't actually know, and his father, and there's obviously a lot of story because we're at 9 of them, so, but they've been very consistent, though. Yeah, like I said, there's 9 of them, and I'm sure Jack will probably have ideas for more of them because he's always thinking and conceiving, so. And parts, I think 1 through 6 are available on Amazon Prime to watch for free. 1 through 4 are on DVD, and a bunch of them come, like, I think 5, 6, 7, and 8. It's ridiculous. 5, 6, 7, and 8, I think, all come out on DVD in October, like, simultaneously, so, on the same day, which is just bonkers, so. So, and then 9 will follow a little after that, so.
Well, that's going to be a fun time for Halloween to have all these movies coming out.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things I know that at least you have a little bit to do with, is Joel D. Weinkoop's The Kreglan Incident. And he's got lots of people involved in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to talk about that a little bit, go right ahead.
Yeah, he had reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to do a cameo in it, because it's pretty much like literally a who's who of Florida indie film people. like anyone I can practically think of that's an indie film is in this movie, it feels like. So he asked me if I wanted to play a character named General Thorpe who is part of a big video conference discussing the invasion and how we need to approach it and act. And, you know, my characters are very angry, you know, like we gotta take them out and remind people how great America is kind of guy. Looks up to Patton.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's not into letting aliens show us who's boss, and he's most definitely not into letting other countries try and defeat the aliens before we can. So it was fun. It was actually my first mail-in cameo, so I shot my scenes myself and sent them in. So that was actually an interesting experience doing that, because I love getting mail-in cameos for my movies. So it was an interesting flip-flop of a situation doing a mail-in cameo myself for someone else. So, but he said he wanted to get me in there if he could, because I always, whenever I have roles in local stuff, I usually always try and get Joel and or Kathy in something, because they've always been good to me. So we always try and pay it forward back and forth to each other. So,
well, I told them that in their next movie that I wanna do a mail-in. I really was kind of kidding, but I probably would do it. But I told them that I'd wear a mask, and then they can make that a whole thing about why am I wearing a mask when I'm home alone, and then it'd be some whole thing about how I'm paranoid or crazy or something like that. So, sorry, I didn't mean to take away from you.
Oh, you're good. You're good. No, you never know. He will probably take you up on that at some point, so you better be prepared. You better be prepared to deliver.
Oh, yeah.
He asked me, and I said, sure. And he's like, can you get it to me by Friday morning? And I'm like, I can try. So the heat was on to deliver quick. So.
Another one of my guests had talked about, because they're involved in it too, but and I like Jekyll and Hyde movies, and I had said that to them too. So that's one reason why I picked this one, because even though obviously I haven't seen it yet, Jekyll versus Hyde being a Jekyll and Hyde movie is something I would be interested in seeing. And since everybody has a different take on the movie, even though they may be involved in the same movie together, everybody's got a different take. So I want to hear your take on the movie.
Yeah, it's Jekyll versus Hyde was another random title suggestion from Sebastian Godin. And because there have been a lot of Jekyll and Hyde movies, but the title Jekyll versus Hyde had never been done. So it was kind of his take on a strange sort of body horror approach to it, where Jekyll is in a wheelchair. He can't walk. He was in an accident when he was younger, so he's been wheelchair bound, and he's an author who writes novels, and he has a live-in assistant played by Joel Weinkoop as his confidant, Poole. And, you know, Poole takes care of him and cooks his meals and, you know, helps him around the house and stuff. But then he hears talk on TV of a new drug that might be able to repair damaged cells, and he sort of takes it upon himself to contact this doctor on his own and secretly gets the serum administered, and it does give him his ability to walk back, but he in his sleep transforms into Hyde, which is sort of we had a whole effects team who did a lot of extensive prosthetic makeup work on Hyde, and it was an interesting experience, because Seb played Jekyll, and Kai Hornick, who had been in Lycanimator, played Hyde, and they both, it was agreed that they would co-direct. So when one was acting, the other would direct, and vice versa. And the makeup effects that Kai had to go through were so complicated. It took forever to apply, but they looked really cool. And you know, we'd shoot all day with Seb, and then we'd get him at, get Kai into makeup for a couple hours, and then we'd shoot him at night. The whole idea being that Hyde wants to dominate the body and basically crush Jekyll's spirit and, you know, take over permanent residency in the body. So he tries to prey on him in ways that he know will break his spirit, like turning on Poole, his confidant. And the idea, too, there's a lot of play with the idea that Hyde will go out and actually pick up hookers, and a lot of his victims are hookers and stuff, because this Jekyll is a lifelong virgin, so he wants to kind of break his spirit by being like, you know, I can do this, you can't, and then killing the prostitutes and just kind of riddling them around the house, you know, and just sort of being like, haha, you're, you know, and basically trying to just destroy his life. And it ends up, you know, culminating with the title battle, you know, where you get to see them duke it out for the body. So a lot of cool effects, and it's very, there's a lot of giallo feel to a lot of the cinematography, which it was shot by Clint Kelly, who also shot Legion Mummy for me. And it's got a very Italian-looking feel to a lot of the cinematography. And Hyde himself is the crazy prosthetic makeup, and he's dressed very steampunk with, like, the crazy glasses, and he's got a top hat and a cane and a leather jacket and leather boots. And he looks very London After Midnight, kind of creepy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Leather gloves. So it's cool. I think it's actually I saw the rough cut. We have some additional shooting to do, second unit stuff and kind of those in-betweener scenes to kind of paste things together more properly.
Mm-hmm.
But the rough cut surprised everyone. I think they were expecting one thing and they saw it and they're like, wow. Like it was really, it's a fun one. I don't know. I'm really proud of how the rough cut came out. So I'm excited to, once things are safer, to be able to, you know, get the team back together and go out and get all the leftover second unit stuff so we can have a finished film. Because I think it's gonna be a really fun one. I'm very proud of it thus far.
It sounds like it's gonna be a good one. And, well, of course, since I like Jekyll and Hyde, I but then again, I don't like every single Jekyll and Hyde, but I like the ones that are a little bit different, which yours is, like one, the other person that we were talking about, Jekyll and Hyde, and I said one that I really, really liked of Jekyll and Hyde was Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde.
Yes, which, you know, I need to see that. I've recently been on an old Hammer kick. So that's one I actually have been intending to actually check out soon. So
yeah, it's a good one, because of course Hyde is a woman, which you know, that really hadn't been done before. So that actually was something new. And
definitely.
She wasn't like a monster like what they make Hyde in a lot of the movies. She just looked like some model or something, which I think the actress was. But she was some beautiful model, but she was evil.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely. That's definitely been on my to watch list, because I bought tons of Hammer Blu-rays recently, and that's one of the leftover ones that I haven't grabbed yet. So. I'll definitely be checking that out soon.
Okay, you touched on this one earlier. You didn't say that much about it. You just said like a few words about it. But Inheritance, the new one. Now, is that an actual remake, or is it a continuation, or you know, what's that all about, that you're doing one with the same name as the older one?
It's a very loose feature length update. It's got a lot of the same characters and the same two brother characters. Michael, who acted in the original trilogy with me, he reprises his character for the feature film version. Unconnected films, though. Just, you know, a new version of it. I did not reprise my character. I let someone else take over that duty so that I could be more involved behind the scenes and in assisting to produce it. So let someone more professional take that co-lead than I. So, and it worked out really well. Him and his co-star Chris Sarles are both really good in it. So, and Kathy has a very, very large supporting role in it as Aunt Rhonda, which is a role like no one has ever seen Kathy do before. She's so good in it. And we have tons of. I love being on a set. It's great to go do movies with people that, you know, like with the old gang, and go back and do another movie with a bunch of people that I've worked with a lot, you know, because it's like seeing old friends. The Inheritance was one of those interesting aspects where a lot of the casting Michael took care of. So I go to set, and it was all fresh faces and all fresh talent. So I got to work with like an almost entirely new group of people. So I got to see and meet and work with a lot of really great people I didn't know beforehand. And it's a massive cast. That's honestly one of the it's actually one of the longest film shoots I've ever been involved in. It took us overall, I think it was like a 15-day shoot stretched out over about a month and a half. And multiple locations. Loads of speaking roles, loads of, like, a huge body count, and it was just, it's a big film for what we're used to, so, but I think it took the loose concept of the original shorts and updated it in a much better modern way, and there's a lot of great people in it, so people are going to get introduced to a lot of new talent that I think you'll have to be watching out for.
Good. Because it's good to have the old, but it's also fun to put new ones in there.
Absolutely.
So there's another one you've got coming up where I'm pretty sure you're directing it, called Frightmares. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Frightmares is... it's a remake of a late 90s shot-on-video movie made by a Texas filmmaker I know named Todd Cook. And Todd did an anthology called Frightmares, which was three short horror stories. And the unique thing about them was that he himself was the lead in all three shorts, but as different characters. I discussed it with him, and he gave me his blessing to remake it, update it. And I took the original three shorts, rewrote them, and updated them today. And I cast my director from like Animator and Jekyll vs. Hyde and Ouija Mummy, Seb. He actually plays the lead in, he's going to be the lead in each short. We shot two of them, so we have two of them, You or Me, which is kind of like a power play between two characters, you know, stuck in a home by themselves. That one's him and Kai from like Animator and Jekyll vs. Hyde. And the second one is sort of like a Christmas horror story with him and Kathy playing the mother, and another local filmmaker, Steve Balowitz. So we shot those two, but I still have the last segment and a wraparound to shoot, but then COVID-19. So hopefully I'll be able to get that locked down. And the trick with the casting is that Seb's Canadian, so he is up in Ontario So to be able to get the rest of it, it has to be, you know, safe for travel from Canada to America. And I'm in Florida, so, and Florida is kind of a hotbed of the COVID right now, so
right.
Not a lot of people want to come or go from here, or should be for that matter. So, you know,
right.
We're just kind of waiting it out until it's safe to lock it. But I think the two shorts we got, I think they came out great, and I'm really pumped to get the other two done. And when that's done, it'll come out through Todd's company, Scream Time Films. He'll have the exclusive distribution rights for that, since it's his film, basically. So, but I'm super, super excited about it.
Good. So, well, I'm super excited to see it when it finally gets done.
Thank you.
Another one I wanted to ask you about was The Choice. That's one
mm-hmm.
that's going to, you're still filming that one, I believe.
Yeah, The Choice is, that is written and going to be directed by David Clare Bennett. He is a director in Maryland, and he and I collaborated on a short that he wrote and directed back earlier this year called Hey Alice, which was a horror short, and that came out pretty good. So I was like, you know, we should do more. And we were going to do more shorts, but then he had this idea for what ended up becoming The Choice, and he wrote the script, and it's a feature script. So we're like, okay, I guess we're doing a feature next, you know, not a short. So, and it's a kind of a morality play that's set in an escape room. So there's a group of people who are put in a dangerous situation inside of an escape room, and they have to basically fight for their lives against a game master who's put them there and is kind of overseeing things from the shadows. And the game master is actually voiced by the great Academy Award nominee Eric Roberts, Julia's brother. So, and he has actually already delivered all of his audio. He is exclusively a voiceover role. He will not appear on camera, especially since he's in LA and David's in Maryland. So, and you know, travel and all.
but
he delivered a good amount of audio, and it's Eric Roberts. It pretty much speaks for itself. So at the one time as of, like, you know, probably the beginning of the year, he's like the busiest actor on the planet. Like, he just he never stops. He just goes from, he's like an acting nomad going from set to set. So he does so many movies. I think he did something like 75-ish movies last year. So.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
he was
in a movie with
one
of
those,
of mine.
Yeah, he's all over
ahead.
The place, man. I was just going to say, he's one of those guys, like, you know, you can go to the theater and see him in, you know, like, studio films, like, you know, being the villain in Expendables, or, you know, The Specialist, both with Stallone, or, you know, being a crime boss in The Dark Knight with Christian Bale, or you can watch, you know, like, weird $5 horror movies that he's in, or you can, like, turn on the TV and he's on Lifetime movies. You know, he is
right
everywhere. Like,
yeah, and the guest stars on TV too.
He's everywhere. Like, he's so in demand. Like, so we were very excited to get him. And to David, the director's credit, you know, we had discussed Eric, and he actually took it upon himself and contacted Eric and his handler and got that whole situation facilitated himself, so, which was very impressive.
Wow.
So I think it's going to be a hopefully a very powerful experience. David's very very skilled, and he's written a very good script, and he's very detail-oriented, and he has a very fantastic location secured. He actually has a real escape room business secured for a handful of days. So he's going to actually be staying in a
Cool.
real location, not, kind of faking it in a home or something, So there's going to be a very good level of production value and visual pop to it. So I'm very excited to see how it will come out. The official production starts in about 2 weeks, I believe, in Maryland.
Cool. Well, we've got a little over 9 minutes, and I did want to bring up the one that you had told me about that's going to be on DVD this Halloween. And of course, it's apropos that it's coming out on Halloween. Ouija Mummy. So you've got 9 minutes, well, a little under 9 minutes to talk about that. So go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, Ouija Mummy, it was another instance of Seb coming down from Canada, and we had intended to do a much larger scale film called The Necroplasmic Massacre, which funding fell through for at the time, and we're still hoping to get it made at one point, but that fell through. But he was already booked to come, and we had people on standby for a film. So there was a window of time where it's like, well, do we do this on like no money, or do we try and find a backup? So there was a weekend where he was on a camping trip with friends, and while he was gone for the weekend, I wrote a first draft, fastest script I've ever written in my life. I wrote a first draft for something that was at the time, the spec script was called Mummy Massacre, and it was basically an idea we had discussed of just six people in a house with a mummy. And I cranked that out, and he came back and read it and was like, oh man, So I was like, let's do this. And he's like, let's do it. So I casted it up super fast, and we rented a very nice house on the other side of town here, and had a shockingly the smoothest, most easygoing, just perfecto shoot I've ever had in 14 years. It was just so smooth. The cast was all on point. They killed it. We went into it expecting to make a very serious horror movie, but then it kind of, as we were doing it was obvious that there was going to be a level of camp, which sometimes rears its head when you least expect it. But man, the
Right.
final version is, it's one of my favorite things that I've ever done. It's like, it's hard to explain, but it's a movie of varying tones. It kind of feels like a Lifetime movie at points, then it turns into a Ouija board movie, then it turns into a mummy movie. It has a weird Scooby-Doo-ish type of vibe to it. It's just very wacky and crazy, and I love every second of it. The people in it just killed it. I couldn't be more happy with it. So I'm very excited for that to come out on DVD on October
Aww.
27th. DVD everywhere, and I think digital will actually be in September through Wild Eye. So, and it is a really fun, wild movie. New, you know, a young newlywed couple moving into a house where someone died previously, and the wife has an old Ouija board that was in her family that she uses, and they have a housewarming party, and she lets loose the spirit of an ancient Egyptian goddess that possesses her, and the party goes to hell. So.
Well, we've got a little under 6 minutes. So, one thing I wanted to make sure I had you say, or well, I asked you, just in case we get cut off, because sometimes they cut off right at the minute and sometimes they leave it go. So, I don't know about Blog Talk Radio. But anyway, so if you could let people know what's the best way to contact you, whether they want to talk with you, offer you work, or buy some of your movies, let them know, anybody that may be listening, what's the best way to get in contact with you.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, the best way to contact me is right on Facebook. Dustin Hubbard, I'm pretty easy to find. Hit me up, message me. I can get you clued into anything and everything I have available, what's coming, if you've got, you know, projects or ideas to pitch to me, or want to pitch yourself to me as, you know, talent or whatever. I'm 100% fully accessible and always ready to talk. So everyone hit me up. I love working with everyone. I want to meet new people and collaborate on great stuff. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, because you've been working with a lot of good people, and you might as well work with some more good new people. Why not?
Definitely. And I like to stay busy, obviously. So.
I can see.
Even in pandemic, I'm still, like, constantly writing, and, you know, I have, like, a laundry list of things I'm ready to start shooting once things are safe. So.
Is there anything that you have going on as far as movie-wise that isn't on IMDb that you want to, like, just give a short little thing? Because we've only got, like, 3 minutes.
You know, a big one that's coming up that just actually appeared on my IMDb recently was Last Stand of the Dead, a movie that Kyle Zeitan wrote and is going to direct, that'll be happening up north, hopefully later this year, which is a, you know, zombie apocalypse movie. That actually has a really fantastic script, and he has a pretty solid vision for that, so I'm very excited to see that happen. There's some other stuff yet, but there's still in some baby stages so far. So if the pandemic ever quits too, I have a slasher movie that I've been trying to get made for years called I Love You Less, which I'm hoping to finally get off the ground as well. It's been on IMDb for a while, but it's kind of been in development hell for a while for a number of different reasons. But I'm very excited to hopefully get that off the ground soon as well. So, which at the time when I wrote it didn't make much sense, I think, to a lot of people, but now it does because it's a very internet-based slasher movie about, you know, people connecting online and video chatting and all that stuff, which is very commonplace nowadays in a worldwide pandemic where people are making movies in, you know, Zoom chats and stuff. So not very original at this point, but I still like the story, so I'm hoping to get that off the ground here eventually as well.
Yeah, something doesn't have to be original to be good, so.
That is true.
There's like a minute and a half left, so if there's anything you want to say to people that might be listening, like encouragement or something for making movies.
Yeah, you know, if you want to do it, you should definitely do it. My producing mentality is if I meet people I like, or, you know, filmmakers or actors that I like, you know, I just say, F it, and I do it. I'm like, hey, let's do it. If you want to do it, you just got to get off your butt and do it. Don't think about what other people tell you, because they're just going to try and hold you back, you know? And I said, screw it, and decided to make my first movie 14 years ago, and here I am 14 years later and produced, you know, 60-some movies. So you just got to get out there and do it, and, you know, it's worth it. Nothing's better than seeing a finished film that you can be proud of.
Oh, I'm sure.
So that's actually the most gratifying thing.
I would think that it would be. That's about all the time. I'm sorry, I got to cut you off, but they'd cut us off eventually anyway. So, but Dustin
no worries.
Hubbard, yeah, thank you very much for being on the show, and hopefully maybe sometime in the future you can come back and talk about new things. So
definitely.
Have a good Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you. You as well. Thanks for having me. I had fun.
Thank you. Same here. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.